ICMA University is pleased to present this online program entitled Sharpening the Focus on Social Equity to Make Strategic Budget Decisions. We are very pleased to welcome all of you to this presentation. I would like to draw everyone's attention to the links box located on the left of the screen. This area contains links to handouts and resources related to today's program. When you click on a link, a separate web browser window or tab will open so that you can view, save, or print each item. The webinar evaluation link is also in this area. You must be logged into ICMA University to access the survey from here, but you can also find it on your dashboard after today's program by clicking on the program title. It is my pleasure to introduce today's presenters, Gordon Goodwin, Zan Gibbs, Jonathan Butler, and Chris Fabian. Gordon Goodwin is the Government Alliance on Race and Equity Director at the New Race Forward, where he works with senior leadership teams to help nonprofit organizations achieve mission and program alignment. He has 30 years of experience working for and with foundations, community development organizations, and public-private sector consortia in both metropolitan and rural settings. His work has contributed to poverty reduction and racial equity public policy efforts with organizations such as PolicyLink and Aspen Institute, among many others. Zan Gibbs is the Chief Equity Officer for the City of San Antonio, overseeing citywide equity work that spans all departments with the goal of advancing equity in budgeting, community engagement, and program and service delivery. Prior to this, Zan was the Equity and Inclusion Program Manager for the Portland Bureau of Transportation in Oregon and initially came to public sector after spending 20 years working on various racial and social justice initiatives in the nonprofit sector, including leading racial justice trainings and retreats and community organizing around displacement and gentrification issues. Jonathan Butler serves as an equity manager for the City of San Antonio's Office of Equity. In this role, he supports successful implementation of equity initiatives citywide by promoting and measuring the impact of social justice policies, practices, and procedures throughout city departments. Prior to this position, he served as an affordable housing specialist for the City of Chattanooga, Tennessee, in addition to service as the managing attorney of two law practices focused on issue-based advocacy, employee dispute resolution, and diversity and anti-harassment training, among other services. Chris Fabian is founder and CEO of both the Center for Priority-Based Budgeting and Resource Exploration, which he combined under the mantle of Resource X in 2017. Priority-based budgeting is recognized as a leading practice by organizations, including ICMA and the Government Finance Officers Association, and is now practiced and applied by over 200 organizations across North America. Resource X provides the software, solutions, and powerful analytic tools to implement a priority-based budget using data and evidence to transparently and exponentially improve results for citizens and the community. Speakers, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon or good morning, depending upon where you are. My name is Gordon Goodwin, and I am with the Government Alliance on Race and Equity. I am the director of the GAIR program, and it is my pleasure to be here with you this morning. Welcome to ICMA members. Welcome to GAIR members as well. In the next 20 minutes, I'm going to explain a little bit about who GAIR is and what we're about, set the table, if you will, about why the work of focusing on race is extremely important to doing this work in equity, and clarify some of the terms that we use in racial equity so that we have a better understanding about how that focus actually helps us expand equity to all the people that we serve in government. So thank you for joining us this morning. We are indeed in some very challenging and monumental times times that may actually define our generation. So let's get started. The Government Alliance on Race and Equity is a network, but it's also a movement. It's a movement and a network of people who work in government who are committed to ensuring that we live up to our aspirations of achieving a racially just society and democracy. And what's important about this movement and the network is that it has grown substantially over the past couple of years. I joined staff in 2017 after doing some work as a contractor with GARE in 2016. And in the short time that I've been with the organization, or actually you could probably say I've been with it since some of its early days, it's grown almost doubling in size every year. We're currently at about 210 members. We would invite you, if you are interested in having your jurisdiction join GARE, to check out our website or check out Race Forward's website. We're still growing, and the commitment to equity for a government that serves all of us is what defines the work of GARE. One of the things that we are all charged with as people who are working in the public sector is really to ensure that we are stewards. We're stewards of the government that should be serving everyone. Stewardship basically means that we have a tremendous amount of authority and power, and with that comes a responsibility to ensure that everyone who is served by government receives their services with respect and receives them in ways that allow them to be successful. That is really our essential promise. We start thinking about some of the things that really define who we are as Americans. That's really coming down to justice and equality as being some really, really important values that define what government should be about. So when we start thinking about some of the pantheon of statements that really define who we are as Americans and start thinking about our Constitution, Jeffersonian statements like all men are created equal, really stands in contrast to the fact that at the time that Jefferson used those words, a significant number of the framers of the Constitution were slaveholders. Property included slaves, land. Women were chattel as well, particularly in that class. So our Constitution had to be expanded significantly to ensure that everyone was a part of the American dream and community. With liberty and justice for all, a statement that is coming out of the Pledge of Allegiance, we know that a lot of our structures and systems, particularly in criminal justice and particularly at this moment, as we reflect upon the events that have occurred in Minneapolis and that are occurring all around our country, that there's significant reform to be done in our criminal justice systems so that liberty and justice for all actually amounts to what we intend it to be. And most importantly, based upon who we are as Americans, if we see that our interests are directly reflected in local governments and in our national government, if we see that we ourselves are reflected in that government, government actually should continue. It should be something that means opportunity and that means assistance for all of us when we need it. And yet, we have to come to grips with the fact that our history of government and race has not lived up to the aspirations that we have as Americans. Going back to 1619, before the country was a country, you already see laws shaping up that define who's going to participate in our society, in our economy, in our civic space, based upon race. You see laws emerging, even in Jamestown, laws that determine whether or not you can own land, whether or not you can live in a particular place, whether or not you can possess a firearm. We have laws throughout the history of the country enforced by government that determine who's going to vote, who's going to be literate and numerate, who is actually going to be able to own property, who is property. When we take a look at what has happened in terms of our experience with Native Americans, nothing short of taking land, stealing land, and also having great harm to Native Americans has been part of our history. We think about really broad, sweeping legislation that was intended to benefit all of us, like the Social Security Act, and we have to come to grips with the fact that there were two professions that were left out of the Social Security Act. One of them was farm workers, predominantly people of color, and the other were domestics. Not just people of color, but also white women. And we all know that a significant challenge and barrier was set through redlining, which was actually baked into the structure, the underwriting structure for FHA, which all of these things amount to significant barriers that government created, which actually create the racial inequities that we're experiencing today. So when we ask the question, you know, why is it that government needs to be actively engaged in doing this work? It's because government played a significant role in setting up barriers for full participation in our society. We've passed significant laws. We've had passage of civil rights acts. Our first civil rights act was in the late 1860s, and we've had to refresh that in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act. We've had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments ending slavery, ensuring that all people who are born on American shores are Americans, are citizens. And the 15th, ensuring that at least black men got the right to vote, and women get the right to vote later on, in terms of the 19th Amendment, I believe. But we passed a lot of laws that didn't happen without there being significant pressure from community to ensure that we are living up to our aspirations. And movements, such as we're experiencing in this moment, around the George Floyd killing, are part of what creates sweeping change in our society. The passage of those laws meant that in government circumstances, we came to a race-neutral approach to how we deal with race and government, where if we've eliminated official state-sanctioned segregation and discrimination, now we basically have been at a point for the past many years where we don't pay attention to race. It does not factor into our policies. The fact of the matter is, many of the practices and procedures that we use every day for efficiency's sake often contribute to racialized outcomes. So how we begin to take a look at our policies and practices and procedures, and budgeting is key to that, is how we begin to create some broader change for equity in our world. This slide is here just to remind us that the demographics of our country are changing. They're changing rapidly. Associated with that change in demographics is also a tremendous amount of anxiety. Anxiety about what's going to happen to our economy, what's going to happen to our foundational institutions. There should also be some anxiety about the relevance of our governments if we are not able to address and create outcomes that are helpful for everyone. Another part of our context that we are experiencing right now are the recovery efforts around COVID-19, which are bringing into strong focus a couple of things. Number one, when we talk about how race has figured into how people are faring, structural and institutional racism, that is, barriers that have been created generationally, that have affected how much wealth and income people have, that have affected where people live physically in our society, have actually been pre-existing conditions that are showing up in terms of survivability of black and brown people and white people with COVID-19. So when you see that there is proportionately more deaths occurring with African Americans, with Latinos, one of the things we need to keep in mind is that that is not just happening based upon current health conditions. That current health conditions have been impacted by the fact that people have, large numbers of people, have not had access to the housing that they need, to the nutrition that they need, to be able to shelter in place sufficiently, and to have access to employment that has them having ready access to insurance so that they actually do have a relationship with the medical profession to get assistance. These things came about because of the way that our society was structured and the role that government played in that. What we're also seeing is really an innovation moment in government where things that we never thought could happen are every day being illustrated to be able to happen. It's that moment of having political will and having the ability to have local governments respond in the moment to develop solutions that have people who can't pay their bail, for instance, and that's the only reason that they're in jail, if they're low risk, actually being released from jail early so that we don't subject them to crowded conditions where they're going to contract the disease. We see essential workers being designated as people who are working in grocery stores, who are taking care of our elderly, who are taking care of our children. These are essential services. And it begins to help us understand that some of the inequity in our society that existed prior to COVID-19, it's having a light shone on it. Many of these essential workers don't have access to the insurance that they need in order to be healthy, and many of them have to pay for their own personal protective equipment in order to do those essential functions like transportation, sanitation, a number of other jobs that we all depend upon to have a life. So how we make budgetary decisions is going to be key for how we maintain racial equity, both in our governments, in terms of how we make decisions about furloughs, about people returning back to work, about where we begin to reopen critical installations and like recreation centers and libraries, where we begin to administer relief, how we focus on small businesses. All of that is going to be impacted by the decisions we make. The reason that we focus on race is because the racial inequities that we have in our society are deep and pervasive. They have affected every institution and go back to the beginning of our history. We know that racial anxiety is on the rise. We can't have a conversation about essential things that we're dealing with in our society like immigration without talking about race. We can't have a conversation about COVID-19 and recovery without being aware of how race and income are playing a significant role in our decisions. We need to be specific about naming race, because if we don't name race as a key factor, we're bound to leave it out of our analysis. But as we acknowledge explicitly that race is a factor that we absolutely must name, it is not the only factor. It is not an exclusive factor. Race and gender, race and sexual orientation and religion are all extremely important. When we start thinking about gender and pay scale inequity, we can see that based upon our data, women of color are paid significantly less than white men and many times less than white women. When we take a look at disability status and we start taking a look at our data, we see that race becomes a weighting factor in terms of how well you're not doing. We know from social determinants of health that for every significant measure in our society, race plays a predictive factor in how well you do. So when we're talking about racial equity, what we are talking about is how we get to a world where our race can no longer be used to predict our life outcomes, and outcomes for everyone are improved because government is delivering services that are working better for everybody. In order to do that, we really have to target our strategies, and budgeting is going to be one of those areas where you can play a key role in this. Target our strategies to focus improvements for those in our society who are worse off. When we look at our data, we know that race, the intersection of race and income, race and ethnicity, race immigration status, and gender are key factors for that. And we have to move beyond merely providing services to really thinking about how our practices and procedures may be unintentionally contributing to racialized outcomes. Lastly, when we start thinking about some of the terms we use every day, like DEI, we need to realize that we may use that as one phrase, but diversity has largely been about who is actually present in our systems and structures. And it's basically trying to ensure that we do have representation of different identities and cultures. When we talk about inclusion, we are still working to have systems and structures that have accountability for how all of our communities do well. And oftentimes, there are not the level of power sharing and power access and accountability that we need to have for all of our communities, and in particular, those who are most significantly disadvantaged or burdened by racial inequity. Equity is really about how we start thinking about our resource allocation and the decisions that we make. And in particular, in budgeting, this is key in terms of where we set our priorities for how we achieve outcomes that work for everyone so that everyone's lives are better off. And I will now turn things over to Zan and Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Gordon Goodwin, and thank you so much to ICMA for putting this together. It is truly an honor to be here with you all today in these very challenging and really important times. My name is Zan Gibbs. I'm the Chief Equity Officer for the Office of Equity within the City of San Antonio, and I'm going to be joined today by one of my equity managers, Jonathan Butler. We're really excited to talk to you about our fiscal year 2021 budget equity tool that we have developed and are working with our departments on completing. I also want to mention that we are one of those 210 members of GARE, and we have been very grateful for the opportunity to collaborate not only with GARE, but all of our national partners and other offices of equity who have been doing this work for sometimes much longer than we have, and I want to elevate the excellent work of the other budget equity tools that you can see from other city departments as well. We recognize that we are all constantly learning and moving on this journey together. So our office is a citywide office whose purpose is to normalize equity concepts in government, organize staff around advancing these concepts, and then really operationalize policies, practices, and procedures. This is in line with GARE's sort of programmatic theory, and it focuses us very strategically to ensure that we're not just looking at transactional change, but we're really looking for transformational change within government. Our Office of Equity initially started in 2015 as a diversity and inclusion position. It was one individual who was helping manage the non-discrimination ordinance. That person was successfully able to convince our city leadership to transition the office to become an official Office of Equity in August of 2017. I arrived in August of 2018, most recently from the City of Portland, to help really build out this office and build out the work. Currently, we are a staff of 5, and the city manager very affectionately refers to us as the Avengers. We inherited a definition of equity that was created in collaboration with community prior to us arriving as staff here at this office. And one of the things that I wanted to point out about this definition is that we currently are revising it and rewriting it to specifically include and call out structural and institutional racism. We want to make sure that that's particularly outlined, not just in our theories of change, but also in our definition. We knew that when we started this work here at the City of San Antonio, we needed to have an entire team helping us do this work outside of the 5 of us in the office. The City of San Antonio has 13,000 city employees that span 40 different departments. So we knew that we were going to need a network to ensure that equity could be everyone's job at the City of San Antonio and not just our job. Some of the ways we've done that over the last couple of years have been to form a citywide equity committee that spans every department. We have a Train the Trainer program where we train staff to deliver Equity 101 trainings, and we're currently working on department equity assessments and action plans in select departments, as well as we provide departments with specific tools and technical assistance, specifically such as the budget equity tool, which we are going to do a deeper dive with you today. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the Citywide Equity Committee because this is actually the committee that we leverage most as assistance with our budget for equity tool. So this committee has been around for 11 months now, and it's a cross-departmental group with a representative from every city department. So since we have had this group for approximately 1 year now, we meet monthly to really train up them as equity representatives and leaders in their departments that can help their leadership make strategic decisions and policy shifts. So this particular group of individuals has been deeply trained on our tool, the budget equity tool specifically, and they are the ones that are currently helping their leaders complete the tool for next year's budget cycle. So the way that we imagine advancing equity in government is that our tools are really our targeted strategies to help departments focus on improving outcomes for those who are worse off. We want to move beyond just service delivery and really change policies, institutions, and structures. We're using some operating framework from GARE, as well as the basic principles of results-based accountability, which all of our team members have been trained on, and we use as the basis to measure outcomes within the tools that we apply to the department's work. So the budget equity tool is a process and a product. We like to say that because while the City of San Antonio has had a budget equity tool for 2 years now, or I'm sorry, it has had a budget equity tool for 4 years now, we have shifted within the last 2 years to really change not only the tool itself, but how we use the tool and how we train on the tool. The first 2 years of the tool, it was really a simplified version of an equity tool that looked a little bit more at geography, and it didn't specifically target racial disparities and structural racism. For the past 2 years, we have really shifted the tool to ask 10 questions that really look at racial and economic disparities in San Antonio and ask questions specifically that can help close the gaps that are the widest and the deepest. This year, we changed the tool as well from a little bit of a during the budget process itself to a before the budget process itself. So this year, we launched the tool revised in its new version in February. The departments have therefore been working on completing the tool and answering the questions for the last 4 months. The final version of their tool will be due at the end of June as the first sort of versions of the city budget go to council in July and August of every year and get finalized in September. The way that we're imagining and using the tool now is that we recognize that it has to be part of the planning of the budget. It cannot be simply a review of the budget once budgetary decisions are made. It needs to be applied to the thinking within the departments from the very beginning. The other thing that we are very strategic about now is that instead of having the departments fill out the tool without our input, we collaborate with our City Equity Committee members within each department to help co-author the tool. So what this does is it gives us an opportunity to collaborate very deeply throughout the budget planning process so that when the final draft gets sent up to leadership at the city, we have co-created and co-authored it. This is also helpful because we no longer score their responses after they have been submitted. We simply work with them to create the strongest possible opportunities for budgeting for equity on the front end. And then this year, we will be providing leadership with a strengths and opportunities document review for every tool submittal. So to explain a little bit more about this process, I am going to hand it over now to my colleague, Jonathan Butler, who's going to talk about the format and some of the next steps that we're working on right now.
Thank you, Zan. So what is the tool? The tool is really a set of 10 questions. Those questions are designed to assess how department budgets benefit and or burden the most marginalized members of our community. The tool includes an overview that really goes into detail about some of the strategies within the theories of change proffered by the Office of Equity and through our partnership with GARE. It also talks about the design of the tool itself and the questions. It includes equity highlights, examples of policies, programs, and procedures that led to good equity results within other departments in the previous fiscal year. And it includes a glossary. We use terms like disaggregated data, and we want to ensure that people have a clear idea of exactly what we are referencing with some of our terminology. Zand mentioned briefly about the strengths and opportunities, of which we highlight those responses and provide those to the assistant city managers, deputy city manager, and also the city manager to inform the policies and strategic citywide direction. The tool itself is really broken down into three categories. The first category is applying an equity lens. It really examines how we look at the overall budgets, potential reductions and improvements, and we really ask the question of how do departments intend to prioritize advancing equity within their departments, and what ways are they specifically targeting to advance equity? The second section is really about data. We strive to be data-driven, as I know a lot of folks on this call are. And to do that, we look at indicators. We are focusing on what indicators and what data do departments have to inform decisions and how they track them, whether they take enough data in to be able to disaggregate it based on race and income are of particular significance to us. The third section focuses on community engagement and inclusion. How do we engage and include community? How is community consulted, if at all? How does community contribute to problem solving, to increase services, or to recognize and emphasize some of the gaps in services and the lack of community input that may be present? We have built out this section because we do often understand that there are some groups within the city that function solely as entities that are really inward-facing entities within the organization. So we also have some sense of what community means to them may differ from an organization that is highly driven by its contact with the public. So we have also accounted for that in the way that we have framed and targeted the questions in Section 3. Completing the tool and the review process. Zand mentioned earlier that we shifted our focus from being a tool that really served to evaluate. In some of the previous incarnations of the tool, we actually scored, we looked at the submissions from the department with little to no input from us, and although we provided technical assistance opportunities for them to get some inclination of what they should include in the tool, this year we have shifted to using the tool as much more of a planning document. It's really meant to emphasize the equity-oriented activities and efforts that departments will be doing in the coming fiscal year. We've also limited the way that they can respond to the questions. Previously, we may get questions that were answered with any number of things that a department thought were equity-oriented activity. But now, being a part of the process and helping to review the drafts, having citywide equity committee members connected to the process, having them integral in driving the process, and also training them and coaching them in ways in which they are true equity champions within their department, we believe will lead to better outcomes and better results. We are currently in the process of receiving those draft submissions, and we are actually seeing the benefit of how this process and the changes that we made to the process have contributed to significant improvements in the way departments are answering the questions. Zan also mentioned this idea of strengths and opportunities. I'll come back a little bit later in my presentation and talk in more detail about what we are angling with regarding the strengths and opportunities. The process includes a draft submission that is really worked on between our citywide equity committee member and their departments, their department leaderships. Those drafts come to us, we give them feedback, and then they go back and work on the things that we have suggested, and they submit to us the completed version of the tool responses. Those responses will then be submitted to the budget office at the same time as the annual budget submissions. Measuring community indicators. We have a lot of data that we have been a part of creating and collecting with our racial equity indicator report. And we also have other reports that have informed what we are able to do and give us some sense of what the gaps are in services that may be provided within the city and those services that may not be provided. What we know from the COVID-19 pandemic is a lot of the services and the gaps and the adverse consequences of how it COVID-19 is adversely affecting communities of color have been exacerbated. It's actually emphasized what some of these reports indicate. Those reports and these indicators help us get to focus areas for disparity reduction. We've looked significantly at what the data suggests, and the Office of Equity has made a decision to really focus in on health outcomes, housing stability, and economic development as the three major disparity areas that we are targeting, both within an office and how we inform and interact with the departments for reduction. I talked about the strengths and opportunities. The strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities that we are looking to identify really help people answer and respond to the budget equity tool, we think, in ways that are just much more geared towards easy to understand, easy ways to target what we're doing and what we're doing successfully, and easy ways to identify some of the challenges and the weaknesses within our existing operations. We've been fortunate to participate in our recovery efforts in the city of San Antonio, and we have seen the operationalizing of equity throughout that process. We borrowed from our dear friends in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Joy Marsh Stevens, and her office as the chief equity officer in Minneapolis, and also from GEAR, and we created what we called a rapid response tool for the response and recovery efforts associated with the pandemic. The response and recovery tool is really designed to ask four questions that departments can analyze very quickly to determine if the impact of the decisions they're attempting to make are really going to improve outcomes for most marginalized members of our community. Some of the results of that work has contributed to how we have been able to get resources devoted towards our housing recovery plans, our emergency assistance funding that is going into our neighborhood and housing services department, and some of the ways in which we have been influential in recommending some of the recovery efforts associated with economic development, small and micro businesses, and some of the ways in which we are targeting resources towards those entities. Finally, we have an equity matrix, which a lot of our departments are using to inform how they use data in decision making. For example, many of the departments are using the equity matrix to make determinations on where they should be allocating the majority of their resources when it comes to response and recovery efforts. Finally, we all know that budgets are moral documents. They set the priorities for how we treat, assist, and serve people. We are trying to be extraordinarily influential in ensuring that our departments think critically about how what they do in their departments affects not just the people within their work groups, but also the people that we serve. Our goals are to introduce equity-oriented practices and principles and embed them within the departments so that everyone has the consciousness that equity is really everyone's job. It's not just for the Office of Equity. It is everyone's job to ensure that we are doing our best to plan, program, and develop policies and procedures that add to equitable outcomes for the City of San Antonio residents and people who come in contact with us. Thank you all very much for your time.
Well, Jonathan, Zan, and Gordon, those are some pretty powerful presentations I got to live up to. Thank you for such a powerful message. My name is Chris Fabian, and I'm the last of the presenters today. I have co-founded an organization that is focused on how to help communities create programmatic change, like the changes that we've been talking about on this call. And the angle that I'm going to take for this for my section of the presentation is how to make sure that you have the resources to actually fund the changes that you're hoping to create. And that is exactly what our organization does. I think all of us can put ourselves in this position that as March came, February for some of us, it was earlier, this is a picture of an empty street, and the impacts of shelter in place really took hold. We react to the priorities that have emerged, and for many of us, the realization is that we have a real revenue shortfall and something quite dramatic becoming the ultimate focus of our lives. Beyond just the revenue shortfall, however, in coping with how would we continue to run our operations with less resources overall, the next question focused on how do we help our people, which has been the focus of Gordon's presentation and Zan and Jonathan for sure. So this tension immediately took hold that at the same time that we have this incredible shortfall of resources, we also simultaneously need to prioritize or reallocate the scarce resources we have to keep our community safe and healthy overall. And compounding the problem perhaps was at the very same time while we needed to reallocate to make sure that we fund an adequate response to public health, we still have services that are of a high priority that absolutely need to be taken care of, from maintaining our utilities are operating and people have safe and clean drinking water to trash collection, and the list goes on. And so this tension, certainly that we felt, continues to grow. Then ultimately emerging is something that is not so easy to quantify, to put a revenue up or revenue down or expenses, but it's the emerging priority of the type of programmatic change that our communities are calling for. So the lens that we're seeing is how to solve this equation. And that is particularly what we've been interested in as a budget solution overall. How I'm going to frame my presentation is similar to what you've heard from some of the other speakers. The emphasis first on defining what is the objective that we want to be able to accomplish. I'll characterize that as policy, and that'll be part one of my presentation. It's where do we want to be? What is that outcome that we wish to seek? Secondly, then we can talk about programming and the strategies and the changes that we would recommend. How would we execute and actually see that we would make our way towards our policy goals? And finally, coming up with the strategies and the programmatic change is absolutely necessary, but we also don't want to fall short of not having the resources or the fuel to actually get things done. So we find it most important to make sure that we're taking care of that fire, the fuel. How do we make sure that we have the resources that are legitimate resources in the midst of a time when things feel pretty tight to actually accomplish the programmatic change that will help us get to our ultimate destination? So I'll start with that high level. What are we trying to get to? And I did want to reference a couple of organizations who we have found to be leaders that we've been working with. And the first one is the City and County of Denver. And as they have endeavored to define equity, I think you find this consistent with Gordon's definition. I certainly saw some of the very same words provided by Zan in San Antonio. But just extreme clarity on what they're trying to achieve. So if this is the moonshot, by way of the way that I frame my presentation, a systemic endeavor resulting in equitable opportunities and outcomes where race and ethnicity can no longer be used to predict life outcomes and outcomes for all groups are improved. That is extreme clarity for the goal that they're aiming for. And that is the lens through which we can look at every program and ask, are there changes that we can make that will serve this ultimate objective? As we move to a different organization, this is the City of Tacoma, Washington, where the definition of equity is similar, but it's not the exact same. And you'll see these in the slides, but specific focus on engagement, anti-racist strategies, economic opportunity and access, and building and growing household stability, access, safety, and or improving health outcomes in communities of color. And what I wanted to impart by way of sharing these from the City and County of Denver and the City of Tacoma, Washington, is if you're working with Garen, you're working with Gordon, we have some very specific definitions. Make sure that you have clarity on what it is exactly that you're striving for, because with that clarity, you can then move into programmatic change and have something as clear as possible to measure against and say, are we actually able to make a programmatic recommendation that impacts or improves our ability to achieve these successful policy objectives? So with the objectives of the policy established, we can then move into how are we going to get there? And we find this particularly fascinating in the work that we do, which is take a local government, take the entire list of services that you provide, and ask yourself for something, some sort of mundane program overall, what could you do differently that would actually, seeing it through an equity lens, help you achieve these outcomes? Sometimes as local government professionals, I really like how Jonathan put it, this is everybody's responsibility in the organization. It's not just the equity office. Every department can actually participate, but they might not be able to connect the dots right away that everything they do can actually be reformed or transformed in a way that advances your equity objectives. And I'll show you a couple examples from the City and County of Denver. Take a program like the impound lot. Okay, this is just where we take vehicles that have been towed. We keep them here because somehow, some way, they have gone against our street policies. And the City and County of Denver, in looking through an equity lens, considers the impound lot and asks themselves, wow, is it possible when we talk about economic opportunity that some people have their vehicles towed, rightly or wrongly, and that the barrier, the fee, the actual fine that separates them from their mode of transportation is keeping them from being able to access their jobs or access their place of work? And can we actually look at those revenues? And we find this story particularly inspiring because this is going on at the exact same time that you see the dramatic revenue shortfall that we're all experiencing from COVID-19. And so it is enlightening that not all solutions that are focused on COVID-19 to balance the budget are one set of solutions, but here's a solution that actually goes against simply balancing the budget, but it's the right thing to do from an equity lens perspective. Is a fantastic example overall. We move to pretrial services and the way that their processes work when somebody is taken, arrested, and they are being evaluated, and the focus of the City and County of Denver in terms of increasing equity or seeing this program through an equity lens is trying to minimize, absolutely minimize, the time that anybody must stay in a particular facility. And if they could increase costs, this is a service level increase, potentially, to actually go through that evaluation, maybe they can get somebody home more quickly. So there's another just very basic programmatic change. But these program changes actually have a budgetary impact that we will get to here when we get to the rocket fuel momentarily. Final example, just one more. You take something like snow removal. And City and County of Denver has a very clear expectation and high level of service and tremendous objective that they need to adhere to meet their goals for snow removal. But seen through an equity lens, we start to open up dialogue around people who might not have vehicles but need the sidewalks cleared. And they need the sidewalks cleared because that is their main mode of transportation. They need to be able to walk to a bus stop. They need to be able to walk to a grocery store or get to the rec center or the library, just like Gordon had mentioned earlier. And while this might be a higher level of service in some neighborhoods overall than in others, the issue of clearing sidewalks, this becomes a programmatic strategy to actually achieve the equity objectives. And for all of these that we've talked about, of course, they have a financial impact. And so the question becomes, if we're going to change these programs, and these are the ways to get there, can we calculate how much, from a resource perspective, is actually needed and move ourselves in the direction of making sure that the resources are actually there to accomplish the goals that we have moving ahead? And so that brings us to the final section, and that is, how do we make sure that we don't just have a great vehicle for change, being programmatic change and a great objective, the moon and the rocket in my vernacular here, but how to prioritize resources and make sure that you actually have the funding required to get to your ultimate destination. So we use something called the blueprint, and it's a very simple breakdown of how you can look at resource allocation across an organization. But you look over on the left-hand side, and over here is what you might consider where you need resources to go. These are your highest priorities. In our case of programmatic examples, this might be, how do we make sure that snow removal has the resources that it needs in order to provide that level of service, to increase equity, keep the sidewalks clear, and so on. And then the question becomes, how do we get resources over to fund that particular programmatic change, knowing that we don't have infinite resources? It then begs the question, where can we free up and reallocate from what we already collect? And where can we generate new revenues? All of this seen through an equity lens overall. Clearly, in the COVID environment that we are in the midst of, while we have traditionally worked with organizations to look 3 to 5 years down the road, the question might be more appropriately framed, what if we're looking 3 to 5 months down the road? What are the real changes that we can actually make? But the same blueprint would apply. We want to point you and your departments towards every program where we could reconsider the service levels that we're providing. We could reconsider program efficiency to free up resources. We could source a current program differently if it meant that we could free up people's time and money to fund the new priorities that you're trying to get to. Over on the bottom right-hand side, where do we have opportunities to generate new revenue? There might be programs where we can charge a fee. We can look for grant funding. We can be a regional provider. And all of these provide motivation for an organization to generate new resources and fund those priorities overall. We find this particularly compelling right now when we have public health, safety, equity objectives that we're trying to achieve, and our bread and butter, our main source of resources, the taxes that we collect, the rates that we collect, are actually going in the wrong direction because of appropriate shelter-in-place responses that have created a situation where we have less to count on than we previously had thought, all the more reason to focus on all of your other revenue-generating opportunities and resource reallocation opportunities to make sure that we don't fall short of funding the needs that have emerged. I want to show you what this begins to look like. And I'm going to advance a slide. In the city and county of Denver, they took their line item data, and again, their goal was, how can we establish all opportunities to move towards funding those programs where we have an equity objective? They created a program inventory. So this is going to be the vehicle for talking about change programs. We can talk about the way that we change snow removal or the way that we change the impound lot. And they attached their program inventory to their line item data to come up with a cost for every single one of the programs that they provide. From there, they layered on something called basic program attributes. So they also wanted to know, of every program that they provide, is it mandated? Is there some sort of federal requirement? Is there a state requirement? Is there something in their own city charter? Does the program recover its costs? Does it serve the entirety of the population or just a small portion? Are there other people who provide it? These are questions similar to San Antonio, questions that can be surveyed on each and every program to learn everything we might want to know about it as we consider resource changes overall. What Denver did next was apply that equity lens for every single program, and this is very much in the midst of progress. Can we look at that program and not only ask, hey, is it making us safer? Is it impacting the economy in a healthy way? But what might we do differently to change the nature of this program, just like snow removal, to increase our impact on equity? And I tell you, when you look through that equity lens, you can see an opportunity for change for every single program that you provide. And then the next question was, what is the future direction that we're headed with this program? Back to that blueprint, does it need more resources invested to change the way that the program is provided? Or in the case of the impound lot, are we actually talking about reducing revenue in order to achieve a greater impact on equity? What is that future direction from a resource allocation perspective? And our argument is that the more layers of information that we can come to understand about each and every program, the more insights we would have for an ultimate recommendation. So strongly encourage you to seek out the work that's taking place in the city and county of Denver. Kim Desmond is the one of the primary contacts in there leading the charge on equity. And Murphy Robinson, who has been working with Mayor Hancock, is also integrally involved in their work on resource allocation and achieving equity overall. As we consider Denver, their thesis goes something like this. They are creating this initial data layer, every program they provide, the cost of those programs, degree of mandate, and so on, in order to understand where are their insights, their recommendations for change, and taking those insights and moving them towards an execution plan, meaning when the rubber hits the road and we still have to balance the budget, how are we going to make sure that we're balanced, that we have enough resources for that left-hand side of the blueprint, and we can generate resource reallocation opportunities and revenue generation opportunities overall. I'll give you one last example of the importance of program data, and I will begin to bring my presentation to a close here shortly, so we have plenty of time for Q&A. Absent some understanding of the programs that you offer, and it's a very simple point, you are left with a question of how are you going to generate as many insights or opportunities to increase your impact on equity? And this is a budget presentation, so our main source of information when it comes to the budget are the line items, absent any other programmatic data. And if all I had was a look at line item data, this is actually from an organization we're working with, and we look at overtime or uniform allowance or cleaning and contractual services or postage or the salaries of various positions that we have, and if I were to ask you the question, given this data, how can we increase our impact on equity, it's not the right jumping off point. I have very little knowledge. It's like a forest from the trees kind of situation. I can't tell you how I would change our approach to postage costs and the line item to increase equity. I just don't have very much context, or subscription in books, or uniform allowance. And our belief is that sometimes when this is the only data that we have, or even at a higher level, the department budget or division budget, it's hard for me to engage you in a conversation around equity or even in a conversation around how might we create opportunities for savings in this example to reallocate resources towards something else that would increase equity overall. But what I would tell you is that this exact data is actually part of an overall program cost for an organization. All of those line items make up what it takes for them to provide custodial cleaning services within their city. And if I know that, if I can get to the program level that is made up from all those line item costs, then at that point I can ask, what could we do differently around custodial cleaning services to make an impact on equity? what can we do differently to free up resources as more people are working from home? Is there a possibility to become more efficient in how we provide janitorial or custodial services to free up money because we have less people in facilities? Is there an opportunity to increase our service levels because we actually see a heightened need for extra degree of safety and sanitation? Is there a partnership opportunity with multiple jurisdictions to change the way that we consider resources? My point here being, if we want to provide that rocket fuel to actually get us towards achieving all of those goals and backed up by true resource allocation, then if we can move in the direction of identifying the programs we provide, see them through an equity lens, and actually see them through their options for resource reallocation, then we can get there. Final slide is this. So we talk about the blueprint, and this is one of our organizations here who we wish we were in this situation right now. Over the last 3 years, they've had a pretty flat budget. It used to be a bad thing. I think right now a lot of us would really love to have a flat budget compared to what we're experiencing. But the question becomes, if you're not bringing much in, or in today's COVID environment, if revenues are actually dropping, then from a budget standpoint, the dialogue is usually, we really can't talk about funding equity initiatives. We can't talk about new things that we might want to get to because the budget's flat or the budget is decreasing. And that's kind of like the tail wagging the dog. We want to say, no matter what is happening out there from a taxation perspective or a resource perspective, we still have to focus on funding these priorities that we have. For this organization, they managed in the midst of a flat budget to actually add 18% growth in new revenues, $10.2 million, to funding new programs overall, enhancing services that they were already offering. And the question is, how do you do that? There's no more new money coming in. How in the world would you push an 18% growth towards new programs that they're providing, which in the, for the case of this presentation would be programs that have to do with increasing equity? And the way they do it is by focusing on services that they can actually legitimately shrink, that are smart to do. They're low priority programs. This organization freed up 3% of their budget from service level decreases and actually stopping to provide certain programs. They found program efficiencies to free up another 3% and outsourced in a smart way for their city to free up another 5%. These are all viable strategies that free up resources. Here they found new partnership opportunities that generated revenue where they could partner and sell services to some of their neighbors and nonprofits, generating another $3.5 million. And this is South Jordan, Utah, just a great city who has been mastering this idea of applying programmatic business intelligence. They've reallocated over 11% of their current budget over 3 years and added 7% revenue increase in order to fund this left-hand side. And why I want to end here is for the situation that we all find ourselves in, these same opportunities exist. And if we really want to eliminate this barrier that we don't have enough money to go after increasing equity, this is the way to do it. We have to free up from what we already have and generate new resources to fund this incredibly important objective. And we can't fall short just because of COVID and revenue shortfalls. And that is the conclusion of my presentation. I think at this point we do move to some open Q&A, but I'll pause here to see if there's an introduction to the Q&A session.
Yeah, thank you so much, presenters, for that wonderful presentation. We would like to open it up for audience questions at this point. Just a reminder that you can submit your questions through the chat box located at the lower left-hand side of your screen, and then be sure to click on the send button. We have had several questions come in fact, lots of questions throughout the presentation. Zan has been busy posting answers to those questions as well, but just so that everyone knows what the questions were when they came in, I'm going to go ahead and read them out to you. First, we have a comment that this person is so grateful that you're offering this very important session, and they thank you. So here's our first question that came in. Are San Antonio Council members elected by district? How does this play into their support for the budget equity tool?
That is a great question. We have a strong city manager form of government in San Antonio, and essentially the city manager is the one who oversees the city departments. So we do have a strategic role both with our city council elected members as well as with our city manager's office as it relates to the budget equity tool. So in general, the reporting of the tool goes up to the city manager. However, the council members speak about the tool regularly and they ask about the tool regularly. So when, for example, departments went to council last budget cycle, they were required to include a slide in their budget equity presentation to council about budgeting for equity. So we helped them last year when they went for presentation in August to council to include a slide about their top commitments in their budget equity tool.
Thank you, Zan. We've got another question here. Do you provide the departments with the data they need to answer your questions?
We do provide them with some data. We have approximately four different disparity reports for the city of San Antonio and a fifth one coming out this month specific to the experiences of the LGBTQ community locally. So we provide these disparity reports to all departments, as well as we ensure that they're using our mapped geographic equity data that we have on our website, which includes census tract data. There are several tabs that we currently have live, including census tract data of race and ethnicity, income status, educational attainment, languages spoken at home, as well as a new tab about redlining. And our goal is to continually add new layers to that map so that we can have plenty of sort of GIS mapped data as well as disparity data. We do also encourage departments, however, to use their own data as well. So one of the questions in the tool does ask them to cite their sources as to which data they're using for decision making as it relates to advancing equity. For example, many departments collect their own disaggregated demographic data of the participants that they serve. So this is data that they would have in their own department. Let's use the health department, for example. So they can assess how their programs are serving or not serving specific communities based on their own demographic data. So some of it's our data, some of it's their data. We also encourage them to look at national data. So we often send them to PolicyLink's Equity Atlas. We've got a local group out of our University of Texas San Antonio that has done some great equity mapping. So there's a variety of ways that we encourage departments to get data, but we do provide them with options and ideas.
Thank you. And what are some of the benefits?
I will also add.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Darren. Okay. Let me add one more thing to that, if you don't mind. I will say this also. The tool has really helped people ask questions about what data they are not collecting also. It's been a great motivation for them to get more data in some instances and get delegate agencies and partners that they may be working with to also collect that data that will then inform what they will do and produce.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We'll move on to our next question. What are some of the benefits that are being seen?
I love that question. You know, we're currently reviewing some of the draft submittals, so we anticipate the deadline on final tool responses to be around the end of this month. So we've only reviewed maybe about a third of our department so far, and this morning, in fact, I was reading the Transportation Department's first draft, and it was much stronger than last year. So some of the sort of benefits that we're seeing is in many ways sort of a deeper understanding of what the tool is and what the questions are asking, and a lot more concrete commitments for next year moving forward. So we're seeing things like departments making commitments to actually allocating some staff time to being equity trainers and delivering the equity training sessions, to applying our equity tools such as the equity matrix to decision making around funding, for example, around streets or maintenance or sidewalks, as well as making some programmatic commitments to, in the transportation example, adding equity to their Vision Zero plan as a sixth E and not just relying on the national expectations for some of their programmatic decisions. There's also a deeper understanding and analysis of gaps. So there's some programs that are unfunded or underfunded that could potentially really improve outcomes for communities across multiple disparities. For example, having a very well-funded and supported Safe Routes to School program is one way to tackle a lot of transportation and health disparities. And not all cities have robust Safe Routes to School programs that really track disparities and to improve outcomes. So there's an increased recognition now with our support in departments that even if they can't make a funding commitment this coming fiscal year, they are starting to have conversations about what would it take to build out specific programs within departments that could really help address disparities in San Antonio.
Great, thank you. Can you give examples of some of the questions the department explores to include equity aspects in their budget development process?
Sure. There's 10 questions in the tool itself, and a lot of times they need help understanding what those questions mean. So they often say, well, we are getting cuts or reductions to our budget, so therefore we can't do equity work. So we kind of rephrase the questions to ensure that they understand that equity work doesn't necessarily mean you need to add money. It means you need to think about the money that you have. So we always encourage departments to say every question should be answered as it relates to your overall budget. So it's not about any improvements or additional funds you're requesting or potential reductions, particularly in COVID times. We recognize many departments are going to be losing money. They still have a requirement to advance equity. So with whatever they have, how are they allocating staff time? How are they really thinking about what is sort of flexible within their efforts that can make a difference? So if they have a set number of dollars for a certain program, can they think about which programs should really remain prioritized that are serving the most marginalized members of our community and can really create a greater change? So they often want to do the same for everything. Let's say we have to cut library hours, let's just cut them all by 1 hour. We would encourage them in that scenario to think really critically about where those libraries are located and who's using those libraries. And would there be a possibility to prioritize extended hours for the libraries that where potentially there are students who live in a census tract with a huge digital divide? So we're encouraging them to think differently about what they have, even in the time of budget cuts.
And we'll move on to our next. Oh, did someone else have a comment? Sounded like someone wanted to say something else.
I was just going to echo some of Zan's comments. And part of the way that we've seen communities get there, and Zan, you're doing an awesome job of describing it, is by also emphasizing that equity is a policy outcome, an outcome they're trying to achieve, a result that is on par with providing for a safe community or economic vitality or transportation and mobility. And as departments see that, wow, I need to make sure that I'm drawing a connection between, in your example, the way that we're reopening libraries and the way that it influences equity as a approved result outcome, then it changes the way that you think about service delivery and reopening. Those are great comments.
Thank you. Next question. Are departments required to track the demographics of individuals participating in programs?
They're not required, but we are very strongly encouraging it. So a couple departments have already committed to adding demographic questions within their program service delivery areas if they hadn't done that previously. We had an interesting example last year where our human services department funds a lot of other organizations, so they have what they call delegate agencies. So they were not requesting demographic participant data of their delegate agencies, even though they were providing them with funding. So it became more difficult for them to track equity outcomes and progress without that demographic information from their delegate agencies. So they are now asking for that information from their agencies in order to really understand who's being served and who isn't within their programs.
What long-term equity work does the City of San Antonio implement? For example, is there a baseline indicator report that will allow for San Antonio to track the work or effect of equity within budgeting practices?
That is a great question, Patrick. Thank you for asking that. We are currently working on a vision for what we would imagine to be 3-year goals and outcomes based on several indicator reports that came out in 2019. The ones that we are primarily interested in are the San Antonio Poverty Report and the Racial Equity Indicator Report. We did not have any racial equity indicator report specific in San Antonio, and we wanted one that just addressed race. So we published that one very recently. It just came out a few months ago, and all of the reports are 2019 data. So it does give us a really good baseline indicator so that we can start to track progress within the budgeting practices as well as the outcomes. So we've been crosswalking all of these disparity reports as well as looking at additional data online to really identify where some major gaps are that are intersectional gaps that sort of cross different demographic domains. We've identified that some areas that we really want to implement and track over time immediately as it relates particularly around funds and recovery is health outcomes, housing outcomes, and economic outcomes. So those three areas had a lot of gaps, had a lot of room for improvement. So those are the three that we're going to start to require departments to look at a little bit more strategically within not just their tools, but in their work as well. A really strong example to lift up from a different city is that a couple years ago, actually it might be just over a year ago now, the New York City mayor wrote an equity resolution that did require city departments in New York to track indicators in 5 specific domains based on disparities, and they must report on them every year. So having something concrete from a requirement standpoint, I think is an excellent best practice to attain sort of in your desired future state. So to Patrick, your question, we're right in the middle of that, and that's something that we're definitely working towards to be much more strategic about.
Thanks, Zan. Our next question is, in what ways do you engage the community around the budget process?
Yes, thank you, Kayla. That is a great question as well. San Antonio is interesting in this way. We've got a budget office, and we also have a government and public affairs office. So our community engagement broadly is routed through our government and public affairs office, who does do budgetary engagement with the community through several methods. Most recently, a lot of in-person open houses in neighborhoods and in community centers. Much of this is obviously now online, so they've added some pretty innovative methodologies for budgetary input from community so that they can call in feedback and write in feedback. You don't have to be present at council virtually or in person to be able to provide input at this juncture. And the way that we help support a more equitable community engagement process is that those departments, the budget office and the government and public affairs office, also have to complete the tool. So we're able to use the budget equity tool to really address how they operate in terms of budgeting for the entire city, as well as public engagement for the entire city.
Can you give us an example of how the tool has changed a department's everyday work?
Oh, that's a great question. Boy. I have to noodle on that one. Let's use a COVID example. So having these things ready, as well as having our maps ready with our equity map, what was really great was that when the health department needed to immediately transition to do community engagement around the various COVID ordinances, the safety measures, the PPE supplies, what essential businesses needed to do to be safe while they were open, the health department assembled a team with the police department and the fire department, and they used our equity map to prioritize census tracts with the highest percent low-income households and the highest percent communities of color. So because the tool was already completed, they had already committed last year in their tool to sort of allocating resources based on the census tract data, they already had that commitment in last year's tool, and then they already had the maps. So as soon as we had our foot teams going out into community, they were going out into the census tracts based on our equity map that had the highest score, which gave a very easy messaging for the mayor to say during the nightly briefings that our outreach team started in the census tracts that essentially scored a 10 and then prioritized. Rather than just going through every neighborhood, they were able to say, here's why we're using this tool and these maps to prioritize outreach first in the areas where we think folks could benefit the most from having additional support around safety and precaution measures as it relates to COVID.
Thank you so much. We have time for one last question, and that is, what is the public community reaction to Equity Tool?
Before the last 2 weeks, or after the last 2 weeks. you know, so much has changed, and I really want to honor this moment that we're in. I think we've gained traction in ways that we would have never imagined over the last 2 weeks, and we definitely owe so much to all of the wonderful organizers, Black Lives Matter movement, and folks on the street right now who have elevated this conversation in ways that have changed the way our leaders are talking about equity. So prior to that, I would say we struggled a little bit because community had been very used to talking about distribution by geography. So there was a lot of conversations about the budget equity tool being applied to help distribute resources evenly across different neighborhoods. We argued that it's not about an equal distribution of resources across all neighborhoods, but that an equity approach would not allow for the same amount of money to go to each council district for any project or service. So the conversation has shifted slowly and in some ways swiftly. And we're actually very much looking forward to what this new energy around thinking about systems and structural racism as a bold conversation and a national conversation, I actually think will help us immensely to elevate this budget equity tool and really take it to the next level this coming year.
Thank you. And that's all the time we have today. Speakers, do you have any final comments before we wrap up the presentation?
I have just one wrap-up statement. You know, the efforts and the successes that you are hearing today from Denver, from Utah, certainly from San Antonio, are not about a project or an initiative. This is really about a long-term commitment to service excellence that is really focused on how we deliver our services and how we actually think about how we use our resources to ensure that those who are most significantly disadvantaged in the communities we serve are receiving what they need. That is not, you know, as Zan was talking about, equal apportionment does not take into account the fact that not all neighborhoods are similarly situated, you know, when it comes to being able to have the same set of needs. And so the scaling of this approach and the commitment to it long term, I think, is really important to think about this as a service excellence tool for all of the work we do in government.
And with that, we must conclude today's webinar. A special thank you to our presenters and to everyone who joined us today. Please take a moment now to complete a brief evaluation of today's program by clicking the evaluation link to the left of the screen. Your comments and suggestions are important to us as we plan future events. The survey must be completed in order to receive a certificate for this program. You can also access the survey from your ICMA University dashboard by clicking on the program title once you are logged in. Thank you for your participation in today's webinar. We hope you will join us again soon. Today's program is copyright 2020 by the International City County Management Association with all rights reserved. And this concludes today's program. Have a great day. You may now disconnect.